sale, and a special example is all these mean squares, the S estimators, and the MM estimators. And then I'm going to talk about a generalization of that then to the multivariate setting, a way of unifying some of the high grade function methods into the multivariate setting, and call a multivariate MM from the general scale. And example of that would be, again, the minimum volume of the S estimators, something I call the constrained M estimators, and also what I'm going to do is introduce. By introducing this general framework, you can also introduce a multivariate version of the MM estimators, which behave similar to the regression MM estimators.
Excuse me.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. And I'll talk about how to work for the multivariate M estimators in terms of tuning them. And then the last part of the talk, something more recent which I find interesting, is talking about multivariate M estimates with fixed scale. And I'll present a new result on their breakdown point, which is dimension independent, the breakdown point, and talk about some possible applications of the multivariate M estimators with fixed scale. Okay, so just as a review, most people here know about what are meant by M estimators of location. If it's redescending, the psi function tends to go to zero. As the residual goes off to infinity. Okay. And now some important issues when you work with redescending M estimators. One is the choice of scale, and often people use just a preliminary minimum absolute deviation. Or one may also want to choose a simultaneous M estimate of scale. Okay. Another important issue is, of course, the tuning constant. You tune it. How you pick your tuning constant C depends upon how efficient your redescending M estimator is going to be. And a third issue is, with redescenders, you often get multiple solutions. Okay? And if you actually take the definition of breakdown point that's applied in the multivariate setting, the breakdown point of any redescending M estimator is going to be zero. Okay? And that'll become clear as I go along what I mean by that. Okay, but the point is that the definition of the multivariate setting for breakdown point is any solution breaks down. Okay? And so if you apply that in the univariate setting, for redescending M estimators, you can always find a solution which is going to break down. Okay, and so the problem with multiple solutions, though, is usually in the univariate setting, when you have multiple solutions, you tend to try to pick a particular solution. Okay, and one typical way of doing it is people often say, choose a solution closest to the median. Okay, and to me, that's a little bit of an oxymoron, which I'll mention later on also. Okay, but the real way of looking at redescending M estimators, however, is that you view them as minimizing some type of objective function, some type of sum of some loss function. Okay. And if you have a strong redescender, that is, if the psi function goes down to zero and stays there, then when you look at it as minimizing an objective function, the rho function must be bounded. Okay. So L1 estimators don't have rho. L1 estimators which don't redescend have unbounded rho functions, but any strong redescender is going to have a bounded rho function. Okay. A curious thing also is that in the univariate setting, people don't really talk too much about redescending M estimators of scale. Okay. And I think one of the main reasons for that is if you try to define when there are multiple solutions, if you try to define what is meant by the solution via using a objective function criterion, okay, for example, if you just take the typical location scale family and generalize that to a M estimator via a objective function, what happens is if you have a redescending M estimator, the rho function will be bounded for scale, and so it's always minimized when sigma is equal to zero, because the log of sigma is going to be minus infinity, and so you have a singularity at zero. Okay. But usually in the univariate setting, people don't worry about that, because the scale parameter is just simply viewed as a nuisance parameter, and the main parameter of interest is a location parameter. Okay, so it's curious that in the univariate setting, people talk about redescending M estimators of location, and the reason you want redescending M estimators of location is so that they don't, so four outlying points just get totally ignored. But when they do the scale part, the four outlying points don't get totally ignored. And this is what's also going to, and the reason I point this out is this: if you understand this point here, this is what causes all the problems in the multivariate setting. Okay, now if we go to the regression setting, a very nice paper is a paper by Martin Yohai and Zamar, where they study the maximal bias of regression estimators. I think one of the nice things about this paper is the general setting it puts it into. Okay, that is, the M estimates of regression with general scale basically are M estimators. This is what we would call M estimators, where the parameter of interest is the beta parameter and the nuisance scale parameter, and S of N is just a nuisance scale parameter. Okay. For example, some examples of these, it turns out one of the earliest examples can actually be found in the image community, something they call the Hopf transform, where they take a row function, which is a 0-1 jump function. Okay. And so the way to interpret when you have the 0-1 jump function for a fixed scale is what it means is you take a strip of a certain width, and you go all over the place, and you want to find the strip of a certain width, say sigma, if that's your fixed scale, which contains the most data points. Okay, so an M estimator with fixed scale, when you have a 0-1 jump function, has been used a lot in the vision community or the image community, and it's basically you just take a, as I mentioned, you take a fixed width, and you find that width which covers the most points. Okay. And the reason I mention that is then that also gives you a way of looking at the LMS as a regression M estimator. So instead of taking a fixed width, you then estimate the width first. Okay. You estimate it by taking, you can define the scale to be the width of the smallest strip containing half the data. And if you take the scale to be the width of the smallest strip containing half the data, if you use that as your estimator or scale, and then when you go around finding the estimator, and if you use that as your width and you look at all, and if you go around looking for over all strips and find a strip that contains the most data points, it would be the one that contains exactly the half where it came from in the first place. Okay, so that's one way of viewing the LMS as an M estimator of regression with general scale. Okay, and then some other examples would be the S estimators. Okay, usually when you have M estimators, the tuning constant and the scale parameter are confounded. Okay, and so what one often does is one takes the scale parameter and normalizes it so that it's consistent for the sigma when the errors are normal. So let me separate now out the tuning constant and the scaling parameter. Okay, and so the S estimators of regression can also be viewed as M estimators of regression with general scale, as they did in Martin Yohai and Samara, by simply instead of letting S of N be the scale of the smallest strip, containing half the data, you let S of N be a monotone M estimator of scale, and you choose the smallest monotone M estimator of scale that you can get over all beta. And then if you plug that, and then if you use that estimator of scale up above, you then also get the S estimator. Okay. And the curious thing about the S estimators, though, is that the breakdown point of the S estimators of regression would depend upon epsilon, but the epsilon here, however, depends upon the tuning constant. Okay. And so what Martin... And the tuning constant, it turns out that the tuning constant for the S estimator that you choose is one which turns out to be very efficient and one that you would not want to use in practice. Okay, I have a slide in a minute here. Okay, and so what the MM estimators are instead of using basically what the MM estimators do is it takes the S of N from an S estimator, and then it changes the tuning constant C. And then after it changes the tuning constant C, it then recalculates the regression estimator. Okay, and one can do that by, and so the point here is when you use the MM estimator, you can tune it without sacrificing breakdown point. And so the tuning constant is independent of the breakdown point. Okay, and then what I call constrained M estimators, I'll talk about them more in the multivariate setting, they're basically similar to MM estimators, but they're based more on a redescending M estimator scale. And the reason why they're constrained is, as I mentioned before, if you have a redescending M estimator scale, you have to guard against a certain type of singularity in the scale parameter. Okay, and so as an example of, to make it hopefully a little more clear, put it over here. Okay, this here is a little graph of what's happening over here. What you see here is on the right down below is the asymptotic relative efficiency using Tukey's biweight function. If you use Tukey's biweight function here, and you use different values of C. What I plot here is for different values, or it's C squared in this plot. For different values of C, this gives you the asymptotic relative efficiency. And up above is a plot of the gross error sensitivity of the of it or the residual gross area sensitivity. Okay, because all these estimators here have unbounded influence function, but you can decompose the influence function into the residual part, which depends upon C and depends upon rho, and into the design part, which doesn't depend upon the particular estimator. Okay, and so this here is the residual gross area sensitivity. So what happens then is when you use an S estimator, you're basically, by using an S estimator, if you want epsilon, a breakdown point of 1/2, it forces you to choose this particular value of C for your tuning constant. Okay, and that particular value of C for your tuning constant, or if you're trying to think of Tukey's M estimator, usually people tend to, in the location setting, you think of it as K times the median absolute deviation. Okay. And so the S estimator forces you to, if you're using Tukey's biweight, if you use the S estimator with breakdown 0.1/2, it forces you to use a tuning constant for Tukey's biweight of K equal 2.29. Okay. And what you notice when you choose that as your tuning constant, the efficiency is extremely low. But not only is the efficiency low, but the gross error sensitivity is relatively high. Okay. And so basically what the M estimators do, and also what the constrained M estimators do, is it gives you a way of tuning it without affecting the breakdown point. Okay, so you can then, after you get a, for example, for the M estimator, after you get the estimator of scale from the S estimator, you then adjust to C, and you may, for example, want to take this value of C. Okay, and for that value of C corresponds to the one that minimizes the residual gross error sensitivity, and that corresponds to using a tuning constant in Tukey's of K equal 5.07. If you want to have an S estimator with that tuning constant, it would have to have breakdown point approximately 0.2. Okay. Or if you use the standard tuning constant for Tukey's, which is about, this is the tuning constant that they use in the MATLAB statistics toolbox. They use a tuning constant of K equals 6.95, and that would be somewhere around here. Okay, that gives you about 95% efficiency. But if you wanted K equals 6.95 using the S estimator, you would have to have a breakdown point of approximately 0.1. Okay, and so this is how the M estimates of general scale for regression give you a nice way of tuning the S estimators without affecting the breakdown point. Okay. Oh, let me go back here. One other thing I want to mention. Another popular estimator in regression are the tau estimators, but they don't fall within this category. Okay, and one disadvantage of them not falling in this category is the following: from a very elementary level, when you first begin to learn about robustness, the nice thing about the M estimators is that you get to choose what your influence function wants to look like, what your influence function looks like, by just choosing how you want to define your estimating equations. Okay. And so the tau estimators, it's hard to get a, quote, exactly, for example, a M estimator of regression with Tukey's biweight. You can get a linear combination of Tukey's biweight with two different tuning constants, but you can't. It's hard to specify that you want a particular type of influence function. Okay, let me move on then to the multivariate setting. Okay. Okay, as we all know, the multivariate M estimators were first introduced by Morona, and similarly a year later by Huber. Okay, and often they're presented in terms of equations of the following form, because they have a nice simple interpretation. They're adaptively weighted mean and covariance matrices. Okay. And as I mentioned before, the main thing about Morona's paper in 1976, which started a lot of interest, was the point that it has low breakdown points. Okay. Okay, and so one of the early papers to one of the early techniques for getting high break, and so at that time there was a lot of questions about whether you could have a finite covariance and high breakdown point at the same time. Okay, and then the how Donahoe estimators came about, and then Pivoriso introduced the minimum void and ellipsoid estimators, and then the S estimators then were a generalization of the minimum volume ellipsoid estimators. Okay, and so but with the multivariate S estimators, which turn out, I won't go through the definition, but the interesting thing about the multivariate S estimators, like in the univariate setting, it turns out we minimize the determinants of the scatter matrix to some relative to some type of constraint. Okay, and so if you use implicit differentiation or do Lagrange multipliers, you can then show that the solution to this equation here is going to satisfy something of an equation of the will satisfy the M estimating equations. Okay, So Davies introduced them, and Lopua made the connection between the S estimators and the multivariate M estimates in terms of estimating equations. Okay. However, what we're still missing, though, is there a closer relationship to the M estimators as there is in regression, that you can view it as minimizing some type of objective criterion, rather than simply being a solution to a M estimating equations. Okay. And the first attempt at that, to generalize that, was also by Lopua, where he did the MM estimators of location. Okay. But in Lopua's MM estimators of location, what he does is he treats V sub n itself as a nuisance parameter, the whole variance covariance matrix as a nuisance parameter. Okay. And then you take the same thing you do in regression. You take a preliminary estimate of scale for scatter, you plug that in, and then you just solve it for location. Okay. However, in the multivariate setting, it's usually, in the multivariate setting, the variance covariance matrix or the scatter matrix is not usually a nuisance parameter. In fact, it's usually the parameter of interest. In multivariate analysis, most of the attention is focused on the variance covariance matrix. Okay. And so what me and John Kent first did is we were curious if there were ways of generating, if you're given a set of M estimating equations, could you generate a, and also with the S estimators, I should also mention with the S estimators of multivariate S estimators, it has the same properties that the regression S estimators have, that if you want to have high breakdown, you lose a lot in efficiency and in gross error sensitivity. Okay. And so what I first did with John Kent was we tried to see if you were given us, if you were able to choose the estimating equations that you want, if you were able to choose the type of influence function that you have, can you give me an influence function, then I can give you a high breakdown estimator that has that influence function. Okay. And so that was the idea behind what we call the constrained M estimators, which basically is you then look at the M estimators as a minimization property instead of as a property of estimating equations. But as in univariate setting, again, you have this problem with singularity. And so that we had to have some way of bounding away the singularity problem. And so if you add this constraint here, you're able to get a high breakdown point estimator that you can tune to whatever type of efficiency or whatever kind of influence function you would like to have. But this here then is not still of the nature of a multivariate M estimator, okay? Because there's also this constraint here. But then after thinking about this a little bit, what happened when I was looking at the problems on trying to study the uniqueness of the M estimators? What I noticed is that when I was looking at proofs for uniqueness, proofs for breakdown, that there was a lot of redundancies in the proofs. Okay, and also if you go back to the original paper by Davies and also by Lopua, if you look at their proofs, they actually, within the proofs, is actually a way of generating the multivariate M estimator, generating the multivariate M estimators with general scale, like they do in regression. Because basically what their proofs do is, a lot of these proofs involve, well, look at what happens if you hold the determinant of V fix. So if you hold a determinant of V fix, you just have an equation of that form by itself. Okay, and so that's what gave me the idea, or gave us the idea, me and my... Of a way of generating a nice formulation in the multivariate setting, and it's basically based upon a very simple idea. Okay, is that instead of looking at the variance covariance matrix as a large nuisance scale parameter, you decompose it in two parts. You decompose it into a scale part sigma and a shape component gamma. Okay, where you take, say, the determinant of gamma to be equal to 1. Okay. And so when you look at this, you think of the location parameter, the structure is the location parameter mu and the shape parameter gamma. And now we only have a one-dimensional nuisance parameter, the scale, as we did in the univariate setting and as we did in the regression setting. Okay. And then you can define residuals in the following way. Okay, so the idea is that you have a structure, which is shape and location. You have a nuisance scale parameter. Given the structure of shape and location, you can then define residuals in the following way. If you do this, and so if you just make this very simple formulation, which I've used before but never paid close attention to, you get very nice re-expressions of the typical multivariate estimators. For example, the minimum volume ellipsoid estimator is the least median of squares for these residuals R sub I. So if you find the least median of squares of the R sub I's, you get the MVE. Likewise, the multivariate S estimators are, you minimize a monotonic M estimator for these residuals R sub I, and that gives you the multivariate S estimators. Okay. And the tau estimators, you can also use this formulation, the tau estimators. If you look at the multivariate tau estimators, which look complicated if you try to read the papers, but one way of looking at the multivariate tau estimators is it's the same thing as in regression, that you take, you have a structure, you define a residual, and then you define an efficient scale, and you, the tau is just, you minimize an efficient scale parameter or statistic for the residuals. Okay. And so if you then apply that to the concept of general, of just, if you then take that concept, and we can then generalize the concept of the M estimates of regression with general scale. Okay. And so what, and so this was a side point in our paper, my paper with my student Tatsuoka. We were mainly interested in uniqueness, but we noticed that when we want to study uniqueness of S estimators, M estimators, et cetera, that if we can study the uniqueness of this type of estimator here, we can solve all the problems at one time. Okay. And so the idea then is that the multivariate M estimators with auxiliary scale or general scale are simply, you just notice the log of the determinant of V is not in there. Because what we're doing is the determinant of V is being set, it's that we're minimizing it whenever the determinant of gamma is equal to 1. So that is, what you would have there would be the log of S of N. Okay? But if you hold S of N fixed and you minimize, so if you hold S of N fixed and you minimize that, that's what we call the multivariate M estimates with auxiliary scale. And S estimators, and the S estimate, and S of N could be estimated in many different ways. Okay? For example, if you want the resulting estimators to be affine equivariate, then your estimate of scale would have to just satisfy the scale equivariate property. Okay, there's a 1 over P here because this is a, P here is the dimension of the problem. Okay, and so what you can do, exactly as in the regression case, you can make the same arguments and you can see that the minimum volume ellipsoid estimators fall within this class, the S estimators fall within this class, and the constrained M estimators that I mentioned before also fall into this class. Okay. But also, once you have this formulation here, we can then just generate multivariate MM estimators. And the reason I think that's important is because if you look at a lot of the packages like S plus in regression, I think, if I'm correct, the default value in robust regression is an MM estimator. Okay, so they're all accepted in the regression setting. Okay, and so the idea then is that you can define these things the same way you do in regression. You get all. So the multivariate MM estimators or affine equivariate can be tuned the way you wish them to be, but tuning doesn't affect the breakdown point. Okay. Let's see. Okay. And then the theory behind this is then very straightforward. Basically, if you are to look at the multivariate MS estimates with auxiliary scale, the theory for asymptotics and influence function just comes from M estimator theory. Okay. It turns out that they must satisfy the following equations. Again, they look like M-estimating equations, but with these equations here, the gamma has determinant of 1, and the right-hand side for V actually... Oh, that should be a gamma there, not a V. That should be a gamma there, not a V. Okay, but anyway. Okay, but then they just basically satisfy M-estimating equations, and that's where you get your asymptotic normality and your influence function. Okay. And it also turns out that for the asymptotics, how you estimate S of N is not important. How you choose your S of N is important for getting a breakdown point, but it's not important for your asymptotics and your influence function. Okay. At least if you have a symmetric multivariate distribution that's symmetric about some point, okay, and your estimator S of N converges to sigma at least at a 4 through, if it converges, it doesn't have to converge very fast even, then the asymptotics are the same as if you knew sigma, and then you have just strictly the asymptotics and the influence functions for just the multivariate M estimators. Okay, and so the important thing is that S of N doesn't really depend, for the asymptotics and that, the definition of S of N is not really that important. Okay, and so to give you an example, we can also have the same type of pictures here, the same type of graphs that we had in the regression setting. Okay, so what this here I just took from my paper with John Kent in '96, But the point is, the asymptotics don't depend upon how you estimate S sub n. And so that very same picture in our 96 annals paper applies to the multivariate MM estimators. Okay? And so the idea for in the multivariate setting, it turns out, I won't go into detail, this is in two dimensions, that you can take the, you can generate an index of, this is at the multivariate normal distribution. Okay? And you can, on the up above here is location, at the bottom is shape, the right hand side here is the asymptotic variance, so if you flip it over, you have asymptotic efficiency. Okay. So this is the asymptotic efficiency for location and shape, and this is gross error sensitivity for location and shape. Okay. And as in, oh, I forgot to mention it, but as in the regression setting, what happens is the S estimators, I forgot to put them down here, will tend to be near the far right of these curves. Okay. So if you use a multivariate S estimator, what's happening is you'll end up, like over here, you'll have a, in the location case or the shape case, the asymptotic variance is going to be quite large. That is, you flip this over, the efficiency here would be roughly 0.25. Okay? And likewise, flip it over there, the efficiency here for location would be about maybe 0.4 or so. Okay? But what happens, though, then, is as you adjust your tuning constant, again, you can adjust your tuning constant away from the tuning constant forced by, you can adjust it away from the tuning constant that the S estimator forces you to take by using a multivariate MM estimator without affecting the breakdown point. And as you adjust that tuning constant, the efficiency quickly becomes close to 1. But not only does the efficiency get better, you'll notice that the gross error sensitivity improves quite well. Okay. And so the idea here of the multivariate MM estimators or the multivariate constrained MM estimators is that the multivariate MM estimators are doing what the regression MM estimators are doing. And they have the same nice appealing interpretation. Okay. I'll leave this here for a minute. But the interesting thing in multivariate is as you go to higher dimensions, what you notice as you go to higher dimensions, this is five dimensions? Yeah, okay. As you go to higher dimensions, you still get some improvement in the gross. You can still get some improvement in gross error sensitivity over the S estimator, and also you'll notice here is that in five dimensions, even for the S estimator, the asymptotic relative efficiency, which would be 1 over this number, is not going to be that large. Okay. And then when you go even to higher dimensions, this is 10 dimensions. It turns out in 10 dimensions that backwards. Okay, in 10 dimensions, what happens is, again, you can improve upon the efficiency of the, by coming out here further, you can improve upon the efficiency of the S estimator, but the original efficiency isn't that bad, like 1 over 1.08 is not going to be that bad in 10 dimensions. But at the same time, as you improve efficiency, once you get to 10 dimension, you begin to sacrifice something in gross error sensitivity for shape. But at least for location, though, you can still improve on gross error sensitivity for location and at the same time improve upon efficiency. Okay. And this is only, this here, the idea that all these efficiencies go to 1 is just an artifact of doing these calculations at the multivariate normal distribution. Because at the multivariate normal distribution in high dimensions, all the weights are going to be almost equal. And so in high dimensions, when you use any of these estimators, you're basically getting back the sample mean and sample covariance matrix with just extreme outliers trimmed away. And that's why the efficiencies tends to always do that. But I should also mention that, again, this is from the paper I have on constrained MM estimators, John Kent. The pictures for the MM estimators are exactly the same. But they would differ, though, if you move away from the normal model. So that if you tune it, you can tune things for the normal model. But once you tune things for the normal model, you have your definition of S of n, and that's where the definition of S of n will then make a difference. Because if I then look at what happens at the normal model, the asymptotics, I'll get different tuning constants at other distributions. But let me not go into detail on that. Okay. We've got 10 minutes here. Okay. Okay. We leave it up here. Okay, let me just go through these next things a little quickly. So when I was working on this paper on finding the breakdown point of the MM estimators, I've kind of lost interest in that for the time being, because in the process of trying to find a breakdown point, I was curious as to what the breakdown point would be if you just have a pure M estimator with fixed scale. Okay. And it turns out that that if you have an M estimator with fixed scale, that is, if you replace S of N, instead of estimating it from the data, you just choose a value of sigma, okay, then it turns out you get the following formula for the breakdown point. Okay. And this is a general formula, and it's actually... This is a generalization of Hubbert's result for the breakdown point of redescending M estimators. Okay. And this also works for finite sample version, because if I take F and replace it by the empirical distribution function, you get a finite sample version of the breakdown point. Okay. And so the curious thing about this particular result, and it's also can be observed in Hubbert's paper, is the following, is that if I choose my scale to be close to zero, the breakdown point is going to be close to zero. But if I choose my scale to be quite large, the breakdown point is going to go to 1/2. Okay? And so what that means over here is that, and these pictures here still hold if I fix sigma, because it doesn't matter how I estimate sigma, these pictures here are still valid. So what's happening here is, if you look at the gross error sensitivity, if I take sigma to be relatively small, I'll have a small breakdown point, and over here I'll have a small gross error sensitivity. But as I go out here, the gross error sensitivities go off to infinity, but the breakdown point gets better and better. Okay, it goes to 1/2. Okay, at first that might seem counterintuitive or contradictory, but what's happening here, if you try to interpret this result, what it basically says is, just think back to the minimum volume ellipsoid, or not the minimum volume ellipsoid, just think of taking an ellipsoid that covers of a certain size. Okay? If you take an ellipsoid that covers a certain size, and you take the average of all points, okay, you take an ellipsoid of a certain size and find the sixth scale version for the minimum volume ellipsoid, take an ellipsoid of a certain size, and of all ellipsoids of that size, find a data set that covers, find the ellipsoid that covers the most points. Okay? And the point is, though, but if you made that ellipsoid very large, if you made sigma very large, took an ellipsoid of a very large size, you'd cover all the data points. Okay. But if you hold that size fixed and you try to add contamination, by adding contamination, it goes off to infinity, you're still not going to, you would still, that if you have like only 5% contamination going off to infinity, you still have this ellipsoid of a certain size covering 95% of the data and not covering that 5% going off to infinity. Okay. Maybe a better way to understand this is I like to. How much time I got here? Okay, let me just. I want to save this one here. I'll skip that one. Okay. Let me just end with this slide here. Or a better way to understand this, and this is something which I'm recently noticed and I find to be quite interesting, is that there's a nice relationship between redescending M estimators in general and kernel density estimates. Okay, and for example, if you look at the objective function for redescending M estimator, which is the first one there, and then look at the equation for a kernel density estimate, okay, then if I let kappa just be actually proportional to 1 minus rho, what you can basically show is, like over here, this would be the object. If this was some data points, this might be the objective function of a redescending M estimator. Okay, and if you just flip the objective function over, you basically have the density of a kernel density estimator. Okay, and so what happens with the breakdown point, if you look at what's happening in this setting, is that if I were to take a, and so the value of sigma, if I let sigma be larger, that in kernel density estimation, that's like taking a larger bandwidth. Okay, and so one interpretation of a redescending M estimator is you're trying to find the modes of a kernel density estimator. Okay. And so what happens then is if you were to take a very large bandwidth, Oh, if you had a very small bandwidth, what would happen? If you have a very small bandwidth and you have 5% of your data going off to infinity, if you have a very small bandwidth, you'll get a peak. You'll get a very large peak with that 5% of the data. If you have a very small bandwidth. But if you have a larger bandwidth, what happens is that if you have 5% going off to infinity, if you have a large bandwidth when you're smoothing, that peak is going to be suppressed to a great extent, and the main peak will still be coming from the body of the data. Okay. And I have some more comments on that, but my time's up, so I'll just stop there.
You have 3 minutes?
Okay. Okay, yeah, so okay, another point I want to make here is that it's also fun to make connections between M estimators and kernel density estimators. For example, Olga talked about Walsh's estimator before, okay? And it turns out Walsh's estimator is, there are 4 estimators in MATLAB, okay, that they use for M estimators. One of them is Tukey's, one of them is Andrews, one of them is Walsh. And so the vision community calls it Walsh's estimator. And it's based upon a paper by Holland and Walsh. So it turns out that Walsh's estimator corresponds to the modes of a kernel density estimator using the Gaussian kernel. Okay. And the nice thing, there's another interesting property about using Walsh's estimator is that one of the things that someone mentioned earlier, I think it was Grohinger, he mentioned that Tukey said you should always try the classical approach and then try the robust approach and see if there's any difference. Okay. And so the interesting thing about this is that if you vary sigma, as sigma goes off to infinity, that's the classical approach. As you make sigma smaller, that becomes more of the quote robust approach. If you look at it in terms of kernel density estimation, if the picture of the density doesn't change that much, then you're pretty happy with what the density looks like. Okay, but there's another interesting property of the normal kernel has, and also Walsh's M estimator will then inherit that property. It's the following: is that if you were to take a larger, if you were to vary sigma, you know, for a very large sigma, which means for a large bandwidth, you would expect to only have one mode if you take it large enough. Okay. But as you let sigma get smaller and smaller, you would expect to have more solutions. So you have more critical points and more solutions to the M estimating equations. Okay. And it turns out, curiously, that doesn't always happen. Okay. That is, it's possible when you use these M estimates or a kernel density estimate, as you vary sigma, as sigma gets smaller and as sigma gets larger, you don't necessarily get less solutions to the M estimating equations, or that is less modes. But it's known to only happen if and only if you're using a normal kernel. And so in robustness context, it only happens if and only if you're using Walsh's M estimator. Now I'll stop there. Okay. I don't want to use that one.
I would like to get rid of a very general remark. I'm a little bit surprised and disappointed that many concepts which are used outside of robustness are not observed in robust statistics. And one such recipe is suited to combine high breakdown and a particular influence function without any efforts. So once you have got a high breakdown, a good and consistent estimator, initial estimator for a particular model, just do Legrand's one-step construction, which is often used in semi-parametrics and common there. Then you combine and insert. You can insert any given influence function under very weak regularity conditions to maintain first the breakdown point. And secondly, produce an estimator which has this given influence function, in particular, achieve high efficiency at the ideal model. But it really goes to one. One only needs boundedness of the influence function or its approximation. So it seems to me it's very rewarding to to look at a variety of estimators and how to construct them to provide both properties separately. But once I got an initial estimator with a height breakdown point, it requires no efforts at all to combine it with a principal influence function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be what the one we. I was going to talk about that further at the last slide here. Yeah, and so in robustness, often this would be something like the one-step estimators. You begin with a high breakdown point estimator, then you do a reweighting algorithm. Okay, and the point I was going to make about that is if you study what the one-step estimators are doing, okay. Is that basically if you have a, you know, suppose this is what you're doing here, you begin with a high breakdown point estimator, okay? The one-step estimators, if you're using an iterative reweighting algorithm, you can show that in this case it'll be always a decreasing algorithm, okay? So if you happen to start in this area here, you're kind of jumping towards this area here. So I view the one-step estimates as basically trying to jump towards the MM estimator. Okay, so I agree with your point. Okay, but the difference is numerical. And what I was going to suggest here is that what happens if you do the one step in the multivariate version, if you're not careful, you can jump towards the singularity. Because the one step in the multivariate version, because you're using the variance covariance matrix, okay, you're taking a step to decrease the objective function. Okay, and because there's this large singularity, you're decreasing it. It's possible you can jump into an area, something that, which is not really what you want. And so the point I was going to make here is that if you want to use one step when you're doing variance, when you're doing robust location and scatter, if you want to use a one step technique, I would recommend using a one step technique, but hold the scale fixed, hold the determinant fixed, and only do a one step on the shape and the location. Because if you do a one-step using the location and scatter, where you're also changing the scale component, you could be jumping away from where you think you're going. Especially if you have bad data points. I mean, because if you use the singularity means that if you look at these iteratively reweighted algorithms, okay, you can look at them as when you're doing iteration, okay. I say, yeah, we're doing one step, okay? The step is going to decrease your objective function, okay? But you want to decrease the objective, and the, mm-hmm. no, the...
Why okay. Don't we postpone this for the break?
Okay.
Because time is up, but it's very interesting discussion. Thank you very much.
Okay.